this is what I came here for, compete for championships.
I believe in our group. I know that we can still win four more.
This is his 50th NBA Finals game.
One thing about this Heat team, they're not afraid.
And Grant, his left leg.
Oh, he's walking back to the locker room.
The Lakers are absolutely on fire. An avalanche here from the Lakers in game one, dominating. This was a complete performance by the Lakers.
Welcome to The Jump, presented by Dell.
Welcome to The Jump. I am Rachel Nichols, joined, as always, in the bubble by NBA champ Richard Jefferson.
Yes, you are.
And from Atlanta, Georgia, the eight-time All-Star, Mr. Vince Carter. Now, Vince is sitting in a TV studio.
Guys?
And, Vince, you don't know this, but you might be seeing what's between me and Richard.
Yeah, I was wondering that earlier, but
okay.
I didn't
all right,
want
well,
to ask.
Let's show him. Let's show him what it is.
Let's show him.
Oh, Vince, look at that. It is the 2020 NBA Sportsmanship Award.
You are the winner.
Mr. Vince Carter. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's crazy.
Congratulations.
That's pretty.
Right? Look at that.
That's nice.
Pretty, big fella.
That is
in a different time, you'd be here with us in person, but what's your reaction here?
Oh, man, that'd have been awesome. That's awesome, man. I had no clue, man. I remember getting the sheets to fill it out. You know, you fill out everybody else, but, you know, I...
Yeah, so wow. Did I. I filled out everybody but you, so that's why I'm so amazed.
Come on.
That this is sitting here.
You're a terrible person.
Well, but I'm a terrible person, but it's a joke because I was retired when they were voting, God. So I didn't get a vote. So.
But you were Vince's teammate. Can you, because Vince is too humble, but can you, Richard, explain why he got this award, why he is such a good teammate?
Let me say this, man. Like, Vince, and, you know, we're going to have this conversation in front of you, so just listen. No, growing up, like, I loved Vince. Like, I was a dunker, and he was my favorite dunker. And then we had that Nike commercial together, and that was my, oh, my God, I think I might have made it moment. And then to be his teammate and to have him just be a great teammate, and then to watch him go on and just continue to mentor so many young players, mm-hmm. and what he's meant to this game, and then even, you know, the Air Canada and what he meant to Canadian basketball. This man has been an ambassador for the game of basketball for so long, and at no point in time has he ever been an individual that you couldn't look up to, that you couldn't, you know, depend on. And so this award is something. This is a career award. So I think it's just awesome, man. And I'm so
thank
happy
you,
for you.
That's crazy, man. Thank you.
Yeah. Congratulations,
yeah,
Vince
BC.
Carter.
Thank
well
you.
Well earned, oh, indeed.
I'm actually speechless because I'm glad I didn't ask you guys off air. You would blow me off. So mm-hmm. whatever. We'll talk about it later. That's good, man. That's crazy. Didn't see that coming.
Very well earned. And I love what Richard said about the time that you have taken to mentor
RJ,
all
man.
The young
really.
Players on all the teams you have been on. You have changed careers. And I know that Trae Young is just the last one, but there are so many future superstars in this league that will be that way in part because of you. So well earned, my friend.
Yes, indeed. There will be no more nice things I will ever say
that's
about
it.
You.
That's it. Richard,
I just want to make sure.
RJ, I know this already.
All right, coming up a little later in the show, I sat down with Anthony Davis, the star of Game 1, to discuss his first trip to the finals, what it's like to have his parents watching him here in person in the bubble. That was a whole ordeal. We'll get to that. And his relationship with LeBron, his dedication to Kobe Bryant as well. First, though, the Lakers won by 18 points last night, but even worse than that for the Heat, Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, Goran Dragic, all hobbled with injuries. Dragic sustained a plantar tear in his left foot. Ooh. Here is Jimmy on the Dragic injury after the game.
Jimmy, sorry to tell you this, but there's a wide reporting now that Goran has a torn plantar fascia, so it's unlikely he'd be able to return. So what does the team need to do now to rally with him unlikely to be back?
Be ready to go with or without Goran. We're still expected to win. We still know that we can. Like I said earlier, we want that guy out there with us. He's a big part in what we're trying to do. But until we can't have him back, we got to go out there and we got to fight even harder. We got to try to cover up what he gives us and make up for it. We're capable of it. We have to be capable of it. So moving forward, with or without Goran, we better hurry up and tie it up 1-1.
Well, that task will be tougher. Today, the Heat announced that Dragic and Bam Adebayo both doubtful for Game 2 tomorrow. Vince, how much do you blame the injuries for the way that game unfolded last night?
You know, you feel bad. Gordon's one of my former teammates. I mean, there's a lot of guys playing this game or former teammates of mine, but Gordon's a former teammate of mine. Yeah, right. And I feel bad for him. The injuries happened after the beatdown started, first and foremost. But I tell you, you know, leading scorer going out like that, like, you can't recover from that. You can't make up. I mean, you have a guy in Kendrick Nunn who was 8-for-11 with 18 points, who played great in his 20 minutes. He was a starter. So you implement him and you feel comfortable that he knows the offense. And, you know, it's a big stage and you just hope he doesn't get too rattled. But I think those 20 minutes were important now for sure, mm-hmm. because Gorin's not in the mix.
Yeah, like for me, LaVinch, you said it perfectly. I think the injuries prevented a comeback or them being able to fight back, because it was Jimmy was hobbled and then you see Bam get banged up and Gorn go down. So, you know, that momentum had already started to swing, right? But you saw a big run by the Miami Heat to start the game, and then the Lakers answered back. And then once those injuries started to pile up, that momentum just kept going for the Lakers. So at that point in time, there really wasn't much that they can do. So I don't want to give too much credit to the injuries. The Lakers were playing well. It just prevented a comeback.
Yeah. And look, Jimmy
and
Butler
showed
up.
With that being said, guys.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. With that being said, you know, you look on the bench. Okay, you can put in Kendrick Nunn to kind of, you know, to replace and try to subside some of the scoring there. But who do you put in to replace Bam? You know, it's like, where do you go from there? You already were looking at you needed two bigs to play. Where do you go? So, I mean, this is a big blow.
Yeah, and I was just going to say that Jimmy Butler showed up to media availability today in a pair of UGG slippers. So not to show that he is, you know, still confident. Mm-hmm. He's not hiding in his room, rattled.
Yeah.
He says that the ankle is okay enough to play. So I don't know. I do want to squeeze in before we go to break real quick. Lakers side, they shot almost 40% from long distance. They capitalized when the Heat double-teamed AD and LeBron. So what do you think?
If the Lakers can shoot 40% from three, and if they were in the middle third of three-point shooting in the NBA season, they were a guaranteed lock to win a championship with the size and the talent and the defense they had. The problem is they were in the bottom third all year, and that was the one question, if they could shoot the ball well enough to win a championship. Last night, they shot the ball well enough to beat, you know, any team.
Anybody.
To tell you the truth, with that size and the way they shot the ball, it was just so impressive.
Well, I got to interrupt you guys for a quick minute. If you're watching us on ESPN2, you're going to see baseball. But if you're watching us on any of the other networks, and ESPN has a lot of them, just click, because we're going to still on with the rest of the show. All right, Vince, can you also speak to the Lakers' three-point shooting here? Because they weren't a three-point shooting team all season. They were in the bottom third of the league. But this playoffs in the bubble, they have been consistently better than they were in the regular season. And last night, they came out hot.
You know, and if I'm the opponent playing the Lakers, we have to pick our poison. Do you want Anthony Davis and LeBron James to have their way with our team playing one-on-one? Or are we going to live with, you know, Rondo hitting threes without, I mean, he wasn't hitting touching the rim when he was hitting the threes. Caruso, Kuzma, you know, the quote unquote others, you kind of have to kind of pick your poison. Where do you go? How do you want to lose? How are you willing to lose? And I feel like right now I'm going to lose with those guys making threes and not letting LeBron and AD dominate like that. Yes, they're going to dominate because they're super, superstars. They're elite, but I'm putting two bodies on them and making these other guys have to make shots to beat us. And we tip our hat after that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, they say it can't continue, except then sometimes it does.
Continues.
All right, coming up, LeBron threw down a nasty tip dunk that didn't count last night. So we are going to take a look at LeBron's best dunks
like
never.
RJ.
Ooh,
look at
lefty?
That. So those are the ones that didn't count. The best ones. Stick around. You're watching The Jump. Look at this one.
Look at his hairline there.
The Jump is presented by the new XPS 13. Every little thing is everything.
Mm. George, you and I will sit around and talk about whether it's harder to dunk with one hand or two hand one day, but it won't be today. I do want to welcome in George Sedano, maybe the most well-equipped man at ESPN to talk about both teams in these finals, cover the Heat for 10 years, and now he is the current ESPN radio host in Los Angeles. George, thank you for joining us. You have literally spent a lifetime preparing for this series. I don't know how long it's going to be, though. Your expertise, I don't know how long it's going to be employed for. How worried should Heat fans be going forward?
Heat fans should be very worried, Rachel. If the news that's out there that says that Goran Dragic and Bam Adebayo are doubtful turns into them being out, the series is over. Could they win a game? Maybe. But those two guys are two of the three best players on the floor for the Heat, two of their three best scorers. Bam Adebayo literally does everything for them, okay? From offense to defense, everything they do is predicated around him. It would be calamitous if those two guys are out.
What a word.
Mm. Right, exactly. But George, so how can for Heat fans, let's say, how can they win the game? You said if they win it, how can they win a game? What do they have to do to win?
Well, I think there's some things they can do. We saw in their defensive strategy yesterday. Look, while sound in theory, the execution was terrible, right? You saw them switching constantly, almost unnecessarily at times yesterday, where LeBron was literally hunting Tyler Hero. He was out there baptizing
and
the poor
Duncan
kid.
Robinson.
Yeah, baptism under fire there for Tyler Hero. And guarding LeBron is not necessarily an easy task for even the most skilled defenders, let alone a 20-year-old kid who's probably being outweighed by 75 pounds. So, look, I think that in itself is a place to start. They tried to basically take Bam off of AD and in their switching of everything to kind of relieve him from not getting into foul trouble. That still happened. I just think that if you're Eric Spoelstra, you have to empty the tank now. You're not going to be able to go small if Bam's not available because he's a big part of your dribble handoff game. He's a big part of your cutting game. He's a big part of your dive plays on offense. So just go big. You have two bigs that can stretch the floor.
What two bigs?
Yeah, you have Kelly Olynyk and Myers-Leonard.
And Myers-Leonard.
And just stretch the floor. That's your best shot. Your best shot of winning a game in this series is if you get hot from three and both those guys can shoot. When Myers-Leonard was in the starting lineup to start the season with Kendrick Nunn, they had one of the best net ratings for a starting five in the entire season, okay? For the entire season. Like, you have to at least give that a shot because you can't let AD just run rampant out there.
No, you can't. And one thing that I when I look at this, I feel for Goran Dragic. You wait your entire career in just a false step, and all of a sudden that happens. And we saw it last year also with the Golden State Warriors. You never want the finals to be impacted by a ton of injuries. Like, yes, injuries are a part of the game. But in game one, when you start to see guys go down, it definitely gets tough. But for the Miami Heat, understand this, and everyone knows this, the Goran Dragic, Bam Adebayo pick and roll is like a large portion of their offense.
Right.
It gets Tyler Hero open shots. It gets Duncan Robinson open shots. It allows for so much focus on that gets Jimmy Butler moving and Jay Crowder open shots. So when you take that away, we're not even talking about defense. We're just talking about the offensive combination of the two. It's going to be devastating. And look, let's be real. If the Lakers shoot the ball the way they did, it didn't matter who was on the floor last night.
And you're right, Richard. Obviously, if the Lakers shoot the way they are, but the Heat do have to put up a defense. And to Vince's point, the question that Vince asked George, that is what Eric Spoelstra is going to be wrestling with. And by the way, again, Jimmy Butler insisted he was playing tomorrow, and I believe him. I've known Jimmy for many years. He will be on that court playing, but he did turn his ankle pretty hard.
Sure.
And you guys all know.
But we
got to
remember this offensively,
like,
you know, when you're not making shots, like Jimmy Butler kind of alluded to it, your defense tends to suffer. You know, that's just the reality of it. And, you know, Duncan Robinson, three shot attempts, he has to have at least 10 shots, whether he makes them or not, because you open the floor, you put the eyes are on him. So that's important.
All right, guys, I do want to get to some pretty jaw-dropping things that Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant said on a recent appearance on Kevin Durant's podcast, The Etceteras. Kyrie and KD shared some insight on how they expect the Nets to be coached next season with Steve Nash at the helm. Kyrie says it will, quote, change the way we see head coaches. And a hat tip to Nets blogger Alex Sturm for sharing what Kyrie said next, quote, I don't really see us having a head coach. KD could be a head coach. I could be a head coach on some days. KD added, Jacques Vaughn could be a head coach, could do it one day. It is a collaborative effort. Now, I do want to say they were very complimentary of Steve Nash on the podcast. I don't want that to be taken out of context. But they did say those other things I just read. Richard, how does that sound to you?
Well, again, like, I'm glad you gave it context because, you know, everybody with the news circling around, it's like you just see this quote. And there is some truth to it. I don't want to like give too much stock into it without hearing the full interview. But look, you have coaches on the floor, and I was told by this: great players make coaches great because it makes their job easy for them. And Steve Nash is not going to teach, you know, Kyrie how to play or Kevin Durant how to play. He's going to teach them how to play within what they're trying to do with the Nets. And it is, you know, Kyrie has, you know, controversial statements here and there. But I think, I don't want to say what he's trying to say, but because it's a little confusing.
I think what he's trying to say is it's done by committee.
We're done by committee as a group. You know, LeBron James is a coach on the floor. Everybody knows that. Jason Kidd is a coach on the floor when he was playing. Chris Paul is a coach on the floor. It's like having another coach. So I believe that that's what he was trying to get at.
But with that being said, you still want to allow your coach to be the coach and use his voice, and you echo the sentiments of your coach, whatever that may be. You're the extension of what your coach is trying to get across, because if the coach can't get his point across and have the support of his star players, it's always going to be some tension and just uncertainty each and every game. So I think, with that being said, that's where it needs to be an understanding. You know, if you're going to come out here and say that, make sure it all matters in your locker room, in your organization. But I feel like that's the most important thing. Steve Nash being a first-time coach, you want to make sure his welcome to the NBA as a coach is as easy as possible. Right now, boy, it's tough.
Rachel, yeah. I think all of us on this panel here at some point or another, including the two players for sure, have heard a star player tell a coach, okay, you want to run that play, that's fine. We're going to run something else. We're going to run what I want to run, right? And I think that that's part of being in the NBA. However, I do like the fact that the word collaborative is used in this conversation because I think it does need to be a collective effort. There's no doubt. But at the end of the day, to Vince's point, there needs to be someone who organizes here and who has the final say and the final decision, and that should be the job of the coach, right? So as long as there is a structure and a synergy from top to bottom, I'm talking about from ownership to the GM to the players to the coaches, and they're all aligned and on the same page, then I'm okay with it. But someone should ask Steve Nash how he feels about those comments.
Well, it's
I want to add to this real quick. Think about this.
Yeah.
Both of those guys have won championships, so you trust what they're saying on the court within reason. Within reason, because, you know, as you're going in situations like LeBron was trying to explain to AD, this is going to come up. These are championship situations, and this is how we handle it. So you trust in what they're saying in those situations. But, like, you still need your coach to be the coach.
I mean, look, you guys have played in the NBA for a long time, so you can tell me whether if it's inside the locker room, that's just enough. But there is a public perception issue, and RJ, you brought up LeBron. LeBron very famously, and Vince, you said that sometimes you make a decision to do something different. LeBron very famously, on a playoff game against Jimmy Butler's Chicago Bulls, said the last play of the game, David Blatt was coaching the Cavaliers. He drew up something else, and LeBron said, "I scratched it." He said, "I was going to take the last shot of the game."
Yeah.
In fact, he did. It was the game winner. So we see how he talked about David Blatt in public. We know all what happened to David Blatt. And then take that in contrast to the way LeBron James has talked about Frank Vogel showing up at his introductory press conference, being very, very outwardly supportive of Vogel, saying he is our coach, he is our leader, he is responsible for this. I don't know, you guys can tell me whether that does resonate through the rest of the locker room to some of the other players, but I have seen the difference when just say that one star player, LeBron James, has talked about one coach publicly one play and one coach publicly another way.
Go ahead,
Isaiah. I scratched it.
I ain't got nothing.
All right, guys, we're going to take a quick break. That's not a reason to take a break. I don't know what is. Coming up, we'll have a little bit more of Kyrie's comments. Also, Woj reporting that Doc Rivers is a serious candidate for the Sixers' open head coach job. Is that the best possible fit for Doc among all the current openings? We'll discuss it next on The Jump. You know, Kyrie said some other things.
He did?
He did. We'll talk about those.
He did?
Oh, he did. And another one, yeah. And I'm troublesome, yeah. I'm a pop star, but this ain't
bubblegum, yeah. You a Welcome back to The Jump, presented by Dell.
Game two of the NBA Finals tomorrow, 9 o'clock Eastern on ABC, ESPN Deportes, and the app. The Lakers up 1-0. Our coverage starts with NBA Countdown, 8:30 Eastern. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm still here with Richard Jefferson, Vince Carter, George Sedano, and I want to turn our attention to Doc Rivers' future. Our Adrian Wojnarowski reporting that Rivers met with Sixers ownership and management on Wednesday and has emerged as a serious candidate, quote unquote, for their head coaching vacancy. Sources told Woj, the Sixers' decision is expected to come down to Rivers or Mike D'Antoni. So, Vince, do you think the Sixers are the best available fit for Doc?
I said last week, I thought Doc Rivers was a nice fit either in Philadelphia or the Pelicans, because I mean, he's proven, yes, he hasn't gotten his teams into the finals, but he's a teacher, he's a mentor, a former player who's just been great with guys. And I think he's a guy that I think will earn and demand, will earn respect, you know, and I think the demanding will take care of itself. And it also helped with free agency. I mean, you walk in, a free agent walks into that office and you're talking and you say, hey, we have Simmons, Embiid, and a proven coach in Doc Rivers. I mean, that
really
says a lot.
Point.
It will do a lot for their organization.
Yeah.
Let me say this. Between those two coaches, and this is no disrespect, I know D'Antoni has gotten some heat because he, you know, hasn't won a championship and kind of the style he plays. There is nothing about the Philadelphia 76er job that says D'Antoni. Right. He doesn't typically use bigs.
Right.
And you have Joel Embiid, one of the best bigs in the league. He likes guys that can shoot threes. That is not what Ben Simmons does. So there is nothing about this job that screams D'Antoni, in my opinion. So, you know, Doc Rivers is proven. They are both proven, you know, great head coaches. But I'm just trying to figure out what he did in Houston. What about what D'Antoni did in Phoenix screams that he would fit well with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid when there's already questions about how well they can play together. Now you're adding a coach that doesn't ever use those two types of players. So for me, correct, it's Doc Rivers, and especially if we're comparing the two.
Rachel, I would say in the short term, I think it makes sense for a Doc Rivers Philadelphia 76ers marriage. First of all, it's in the Eastern Conference. The bottom of the Eastern Conference is nowhere near as competitive as the West is, right? So there's that
point.
Part of the equation that helps you get wins. You have two unbelievably talented players, as Richard and Vince have discussed. The question is, can they play together, right? There's been less and less people believing that they can. Now, I think a lot of that also has coincided with less and less shooting around them.
Thank you.
If you look at their team 2 years ago when they had J.J. Redick and Marco Bellinelli and Ersan Ilyasova, it was certainly a lot better for them when they were on the floor. The problem is, can they get along, right? Keith Pompey of the Philadelphia Inquirer mentioned in his blog post that they don't necessarily get along. Can Doc bring them together? That's an extra layer of stuff that you have to deal with going into this. I actually think long term, I'd love to see Doc in New Orleans, because I think Zion needs a mentor like Doc. I think David Griffin wants to be in the playoffs yesterday. And they've got a good combination of young guys and veteran guys alike that can make that team more competitive quickly, right? And Doc is probably the guy that would get them over that hump.
All I hear is more money for Doc when there's
when
a lot
there's
of people.
A bidding war.
When there's a bidding war. Congratulations, Doc.
Exactly.
The rich
however
get
you
richer.
Slice that.
Yeah. Right. So, Vince, I'm going to see if this time Richard can finish the alley-oop, unlike when we all talked about this at the beginning of the week. Richard, what do I say is the best job available right now?
The New Orleans Pelicans, ladies
there
and gentlemen.
There you go. Take the Pelicans job. Anyone out there, if you are offered the Pelicans job, take the Pelicans' job. This is the best job of the jobs available. Zion Williamson, a ton of other young talent, everything the Lakers have that they pushed into the table for Anthony Davis, which was worth it for them. Still, that was a lot of talent going out the door to New Orleans. Expectations are, can you make the playoffs this year as opposed to what they would be in some other cities? And you have a really good team dynamic with some of those players who like working together. So take the Pelicans job if it is offered to you. That's all I'm saying. George Sedano, thank you so much for joining us. We will check in with you as this series progresses to see how your two hearts, your two teams are doing against each other. I'm just going to call it the George Sedano series. That's how I think of it. Coming up, you will see my conversation with Anthony Davis, who had one of the most impressive finals debuts in NBA history. Keep it locked to the gym. The best of five WNBA finals begin tomorrow, 7 Eastern on ESPN2 and the ESPN app. Breonna Stewart and the Storm taking on league MVP Asia Wilson and the Aces. Tune in for that. Welcome back now to The Jump. I sat down with Anthony Davis earlier this week to discuss playing in the NBA finals, his relationship with LeBron James, and that time he forgot to put on his jersey for a game in the 2012 Olympics. Take a look.
Gets inside, finds Davis for the slam. Davis' second and third effort overpowers the Heat. An avalanche here from the Lakers in game one.
Just the moment I waited for my entire career, and now I'm here, so, you know, maximize the opportunity.
It wasn't a short road for you to get here.
Yep.
You played 7 years in the league. You only made the playoffs twice. You never made it out of the second round.
Yep.
How did that eventually start to affect you to know that you were never there at the end for that NBA conversation where the best of the best battled out?
It bothered me a lot. I mean, because at the end of the day, I want to win. I want to be able to compete for championships on a consistent basis. I want to be able to have those battles with the, you know, league's elite, and to do it, you know, in later rounds, you know, the Western Conference Finals, finals, you know, that's where it really kicks in and really where you can make a name for yourself.
Your parents just got out of quarantine here in the bubble.
Yep.
With all of the things along the way that they sacrificed for you, what does it mean to you to have them here, and what's it going to mean to them to see you out on that floor?
You know, it means a lot, especially to my dad. I mean, my mom is, she's a fan, obviously, but my dad really gets into it. Like, he's like, we got to find a way to get in this bubble. I don't care if we have to quarantine for 10 days, 14, I don't care. I need to find a way to get in this bubble. So they finally got out.
Yeah.
My parents here, they're excited. So I for sure had to have them come in and support me.
There's a little bit of a perception out there that LeBron just kind of buddied up and got close to you in the last couple years when he wanted you to come play for the Lakers. Of course, that's not true.
Right.
He has been a big brother to you since you were a teenager. You were a kid at his basketball camps.
Yep.
What do you remember about the first time you met him?
Yeah, it's crazy because we just talked about this moment like last week.
Really?
Yes. I told him, and I had this like little heartfelt speech. And this is right before a game. And I was like, you inspired a lot of kids. And I was one of those kids. And I remember, and I told him, I remember catching a Greyhound bus from Chicago and to all the way to Ohio for his camp by myself, 15 years old. And getting in his camp and remember, like, yo, that's LeBron James. You know, we just connected and stayed in contact. You know, anytime I had a question for him, he'd respond very quickly. And, you know, and we would talk it out. And, you know, he always made sure I was good.
You played in the Olympics with LeBron. You also played in the Olympics in 2012 with Kobe,
yep,
who really took a shine to you. There is a great story I remember from then. You guys were blowing some team out.
Yep.
And
Nigeria.
Coach, yep, K is finally going to put the kid in, right?
Yep.
You're going to finally get your shot. Can you explain what happened,
yeah,
and what Kobe said?
Yeah, we're playing Nigeria. And the guy, it's crazy because the guys on the team, you know, Bron, Melo, Chris Paul, Kobe, you know, Tyson Chandler, Kevin Love, you know, Andre Iguodala, these were the guys. Like, they have 12 guys, but 10 really play.
Right.
And the other two guys, they bring along just in case. And, you know, me and James Harden was those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember we going up, we were winning like 60, or it was like a crazy blow. And I looked at James, and I was like, man, we might go win tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, Coach K calls me, Anthony, you know, go get Tyson. And I run over, I'm like, yes. Running over to the scores table. And we had like half zip hoodies, like half zip sweatshirts that we usually wear. So I zipped it fully down, and as I'm getting ready to take off, I look inside and I just saw a white shirt underneath.
No jersey.
And so I like zip it back up, and I'm running back and I'm like, coach, I can't get in. I forgot my jersey. But I'm kind of whispering to him because I don't want everybody to know.
You don't want Kobe Bryant to
know. Yeah, Kobe, like, what are you doing? Right. Go get in the game. This is your time. This is your moment. And I'm like, I don't have my jersey. And he was like, wait, what? And that's the picture you see with him looking inside my shirt and saying nothing. We're laughing. And I was like so embarrassed. So I'm like, this is my moment to impress all the guys I looked up to, go out here and show them what I can do. And the first impression I make is, you know, guy going in with no jersey.
I like that you have said in the past that you now think of Kobe, right? When you get dressed for every game.
Yeah. Make sure I got my jersey on. Put everything on. I always check and hit my chest, knowing, all right, I'm good to go, always.
This Lakers team has dedicated the postseason to Kobe Bryant. You guys even have uniforms, the Black Mamba snakeskin uniforms. What does that mean to you, to be dedicating this to Kobe?
It means a lot. He inspired every single guy on the team. He inspired this entire organization. He is this organization. But when we put those jerseys on, we for sure play with an extra, you know, energy and effort, because we know that we can't lose in those jerseys. It's like a pride. We cannot lose in those jerseys. And not from, you know, a cockiness standpoint, but more so like, if we lose in those jerseys, we just feel like we letting him down. We just want to make him proud.
They certainly are doing that so far. Thank you to Anthony Davis for taking the time. AD scored a game-high 34 points in his NBA Finals debut since the merger. The only players to score more in their Finals debuts, Allen Iverson, Kevin Durant, and Michael Jordan. That is good company, to say the least. I am still here with Richard Jefferson, Vince Carter. I do want to get back to Kyrie Irving. So, remember, we're talking about he was on a podcast with Kevin Durant, the Et Cetera's podcast. That's part of KD's Boardroom Network. Kyrie said he felt like he was the best option on every team in the closing moments of big games until now on the Nets, when he has joined forces with KD. So you may remember some of the other teams that Kyrie played for and some of his other teammates. One of them was LeBron James, also a decent option, I'm just saying. And our Dave McMenamin did ask him about Kyrie's comment just moments ago. Bron said he didn't want to get into it. Richard, you did play in Cleveland with both of them together. What do you think about Kyrie's comments and LeBron's response?
Well, it's tough. And I respect LeBron James for just not wanting to get into that. You know, right now he's 3 wins away from winning an NBA championship and a possible Finals MVP. So he's got bigger things to worry about. But ultimately, I just find that statement to be false. And mainly from you even had a reference point just a few minutes ago about David Blatt. And it was like, hey, this is the play that we're going to run. And then we watched LeBron take teams to the finals with Kyrie, without Kyrie. You know, so we've seen it too many times. And I think there are ways to complement, you know, guys like Kevin Durant, your future, you know, pairing without kind of throwing a shot at another individual. I don't know the context of it, so I need to see it. But, you know, when you see this is a direct shot. And when it's said during the NBA Finals, when that person that it would be directed at is up 1-0 chasing another title, you just wonder if there is more to that. But it is a little disappointing. To say the least, because you can compliment someone without throwing shots at other people, and I felt like this was just a shot.
For me, I agree with you, RJ. I'm on the outside looking in, of course, and you know, you have to see more content and kind of see the entire interview and kind of decide from there.
But he was complimenting Kevin Durant. That was the context. The context is he was complimenting KD leading into that comment. I'm going to give it to you guys and all of our viewers. Leading into that comment, he said, hey, it doesn't matter between me and KD who takes the final shot. I've never had a teammate like that before that I feel that way about. And then he said, I've always felt I was the best option on all of our other teams.
There's a lot of speechlessness here. There's a lot of speechlessness here.
It's just, yeah. And there were moments, you know, when Kyrie hit the biggest jump shot of his career to help them win that championship. I was there to see it. And there was moments where he needed to have the ball late in the game. But there were a lot of moments that season into the playoffs when that other guy who was his teammate needed the ball and had the ball and delivered. So,
yeah. It was the biggest shot of my life, Kyrie. So I'm with them on that.
Right.
But to say that in reference to Bron, that's you know, a false statement.
Coming up, I sat down with Jimmy Butler earlier today to talk about his first NBA Finals appearance and what he thinks about the Heat's chances now that they've had these injuries and are down 1-0 in this series. Keep it locked.
The Jump is presented by the new XPS 13. Every little thing is everything.
Now playing on ESPN, the Major League Baseball Best of Three Wild Card Series continuing today and tomorrow, plus Game 2 of the NBA Finals between the Heat and Lakers tomorrow at 9 on ABC. It's all playing now on ESPN and the ESPN app. Welcome back to The Jump. Earlier today, I sat down with Jimmy Butler just hours after his Heat were blown out in Game 1 of the Finals. Here's a sneak peek at our conversation, which will run in its entirety on this show tomorrow. Take a listen. I know that you don't ever see injuries as an excuse, but they're real. They're not pretend. The Heat are listing Goran Dragic and Bam Adebayo as doubtful for Game 2. Goran's been your leading scorer in the playoffs. What difference is that going to make?
A huge difference. But, I mean, to put it in the most simple way possible, who cares? We're still expected to win. You know, we need those guys. Don't ever get me wrong. We definitely need those guys. But if they're not playing and we lose, are we 1-1? No. We're still down 0-2. So as much as we do need those guys and as much as I do want those guys to be out there competing with us, we're still expected to win. We got to get it to 1-1.
When we look at the X's and O's of the next game, are we going to see your fingerprints more on every possession?
I think so. I got to be able to do more. I got to impact the game a lot more than I ever have before. Right now, in the next four wins for us, I think myself, Goran, if we get him back, Bam, Tyler, everybody, we have to play damn near perfect basketball, but we're going to have to impact the game in so many more ways.
For our full conversation with Jimmy Butler, you can tune into The Jump tomorrow. Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Vince Carter, best teammate in the NBA, for joining me today. We will see you guys